Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we're doing a countdown of our listeners' favorite songs by a certain hard rock band.
Really? I don't know. I think that'll go over like something that can't float. You know, like a really heavy dirigible. Okay, we are over maximum capacity in the basement.
This is great.
We have five people, including you and me, and on the show all this week.
This is really exciting. And the topic at hand, I think, warrants a large crowd. Something big.
Yeah, so here's the deal. We did a week of countdown episodes a little while ago, back in December, with the Beatles. And the way we did that was we reached out to fans of the show through a closed Facebook group that we have, that people comment a lot about the show and talk to each other and so on and so forth.
That's right.
And we asked them for their top 10 Beatles songs, and we compiled that into a top 15 overall list that then we could count down from Monday through Friday.
Three songs per day.
And I'll let you get into the details on how some of this works.
Okay.
But this week, in honor of the 50th anniversary of this band's first release, we are going to do the same thing with Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin.
All right. So first, let's introduce who all we have here around the coffee table. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us this week to talk Led Zeppelin is, or are...
Kevin Spain.
And Brad Mailer.
Rob Gates.
All right. Thanks, guys, for coming on over.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Especially thanks for those of you who brought beer. Okay. All right, Patrick, explain how this all works.
Yes, I will. And I want to say thanks to all you guys for coming and doing this with us. You've all heard these voices, you know, at various times on our show previously. Brad was here for the Beatles thing.
Right.
And Kevin was down for the Van Halen week we did, which was great.
Right.
And I know Rob has been here on several occasions.
Right.
Talking about... The Grateful Dead and other things.
Nice.
But yes, what we did, Jim, as you said, through our closed Facebook group, we had just threw the question out there, and it got a lot of comments, right? There was a lot of conversation that was happening on that thread.
Yes.
Which was really good. And so, yeah, everybody just kind of weighed in along with, you know, several associates and hangers on, you know, to our group.
So how many people did we actually submitted top 10 lists?
Yeah, I'm just noticing now that Brad's name is on this list twice, so I'm not sure what's been going on there. But we had a total of 38 people participate in this voting.
Okay. And with those 38 people, how many songs total received at least one vote?
58 songs.
Wow.
And I do believe I loaded everything I could possibly find. I might have to have Brad check me here. There's 89 tunes on this list. Now, that does include a couple of live versions from Song Remains the Same. So that's not a, you know, an original, another song. So I think really there's only about 80 some Led Zeppelin songs that were officially released. This band did not release singles. Well, they released only one that I'm aware of, with one B-side. They used up a lot of their material. There wasn't usually not a lot of outtakes for these albums when they made them, right, Brad? It was just like Jimmy Page used everything up, or they worked until he got what they wanted, right?
Right. I think they made them more singles, but the one song, Hey, Hey, What Can I Do, was the only one that never made it onto the record.
Never made it onto an album.
Yeah.
Got it. Until all the compilations started happening later.
Right, exactly.
And after the band,
they were not like the Beatles.
No.
That would release singles between albums. The singles for Led Zeppelin were album tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Oh, that's what I meant. So,
yes.
Yeah.
And so... And they also came up at a time, so 1969, and then really being probably the dominant rock band of the 70s between maybe them and Pink Floyd, right? So... At a time when they could just get massive amounts of radio airplay, which is something you had mentioned, Rob.
Yeah, I think that Led Zeppelin was the quintessential AOR, album-oriented rock band.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of introduced the format. They played well to the format. You weren't going to hear Led Zeppelin on AM Top 40 radio, but as FM radio began to really take over as the music venue, it was a great place for Zeppelin and a great place for its fans, which tended to be a little bit more rebellious and a little bit anti-Top 40 than what was out there.
Yeah, right? Well said.
Yeah.
I will just say that I was never really an obsessive Led Zeppelin fan, but yet I still know like pretty much the band's catalog just because they got so much radio airplay. You know these songs just like note for note, and you can go over them. And there's a funny comment here I want to get to. We captured a few of the comments that the listeners had made in the Facebook group, and I thought this one was really funny. Eric Didrikson said, I can't be the only one struggling to put together a list because the title is never in the song. He says, my list is going to be 10 sound clips of me humming riffs. But that was pretty funny. So, all right, well, should we kick this thing off with number 15 on the list here? So I think this is an interesting way to kick this off because this is a cover tune, right? Yes. This is an old blues song. Mm-hmm. And so when you think of Led Zeppelin, that's the first thing you think of is that they sort of did a modern, for the times, a modern take on the blues, right?
Yeah. And occasionally got in trouble with some people who wrote the original songs over that very fact. But yeah, in this case, I believe Memphis Minnie is credited as one of the writers of When the Levee Breaks, an old tune from the... Gosh, I don't know when it was written. 1927?
1927.
Yeah. Great Mississippi Flood. So, but yeah, this one, you know, I don't know what you guys think. I think to me, this one's kind of all about listening to John Bonham just play the drums on this song.
I think it's the quintessential Bonham backbeat. You know, it's his sound. You know what I mean? It sounds like John Bonham. That's what you think of.
Good times. Bad times to me.
Agreed.
Bonham really when he kicks it in. I mean, yeah, you're right. This is one of those blues songs that they pretty much said, hey, this is a blues cover. We're going to go in and give them credit for it because a lot of them they sort of redid. They redid, you know, Willie Dixon songs and songs from all these bands in Britain in the 60s and sort of made it their own. They did their own arrangements and made it their own. But this one they gave them credit for. Even though they changed it around a little bit, and it's a great song. I mean, you're right. John Bonham is excellent on this, and as he is in everything. But yeah, this is one of those great blues tunes. I think that they put the modern spin on that still holds up as most of the music does.
Yeah,
it just has an amazing groove to it. Don't you think?
Without a doubt.
Yeah,
It's got that Olympic Studio sound.
Yeah. But, you know, big record collectors, or at least Robert Plant, right? And I guess the early story is when he met Jimmy Page for the first time. They were like on a houseboat or something at Jimmy Page's houseboat. And they just started, you know, Jimmy Page pulled out some records and Robert Plant, you know, was kind of like, I guess, hey, these are the ones I would have played you if I was going through this collection. So immediately they bonded over these old blues songs.
You know, the Stones you could classify as, you know, as blues and more of sort of a pop blues or even rockabilly blues. This was, you could hear it and like, what is this? Like, I hear the blues in here, but there's something else I can't define.
I agree with you. And I think Led Zeppelin is sort of the, genesis for the for sort of the modern rock band. I think you can tell the blues influence them. You can tell folk music influences them. You can tell all of these genres influence them, but then they took it a different way and they made it a lot harder. And it's, you know, you can say a lot of bad things about them, I'm sure, but you can't say that these guys weren't great musicians. And I think that that's why they took all this and they put their own spin on it. And I think a lot, I mean, they're the 70s, even though these, a lot of their early stuff came out in the late 60s. They're rock music of the 70s.
Oh, I think. Totally.
And they change everything. Everything that comes after them, you can hear the Zeppelin influence into a lot of bands. And I, you know, I mean, I understand why some of those rock bands or the stars of the time didn't like them because they were so different. But it's hard now to find people to say a lot of bad things about them because they seem to influence everything that followed them. And I don't know. I think they're very, very good. And I'm like you, Jim. It wasn't like that I knew all their songs and all of that, but you did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you knew everything they did. Yes. But it wasn't anybody's, you know, I'm not going to say they were my favorite band, but I loved their music.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't want to ramble here. I'm sorry.
No, that's well said. And you know, the other thing, just as you were saying that, Kevin, that sprang to my mind, was they virtually had no critical support, especially in the United States. Rolling Stone trashed every album these guys ever made, man. And you know, I know the first album, you know, maybe it was the Rolling Stone writer or somebody said, it seems designed for the listener to only enjoy it when they're drugged to the point of senselessness. Like, that's what they thought of the music.
It's so bizarre to think of that, you know, now looking back 40 to 50 years and think that they were not beloved because they have, yeah. They, over time, they are one of the most beloved
Absolutely.
Rock bands and one of the most respected too.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to the next one. Cause you mentioned this song and I think this is a good example, Kevin, what you were saying about how, you know, all the songs, even something that was never, you know, the one that you mentioned was never on an official album. We still know it. This is number 14. Hey, What Can I Do? It was a B-side, as you mentioned earlier, B-side to Immigrant Song, 1970. And there's just two quick things I want to mention here, and then I'll leave it to you guys, is there's two sort of Led Zeppelin hallmarks that come through in that song. One is the superb, I think, use of acoustic guitars. So when you first think of Led Zeppelin, you think of them as being the heavy electric guitars. Jimmy Page, you picture him with that Gibson guitar and... You just, you know, amps cranked up and all of that. But they do a lot of really great work with acoustic guitars and blending them into the songs. And then the other thing is the Robert Plant vocals, the being able to go from this very sort of like moody, sing-songy kind of thing. And then just immediately in the next line, jumping into this powerful sort of wail, right? And you see that a lot in their songs as well. And I think that was... I think Robert Plant, in just not only how he looked as a frontman, but also the way he sang, was really important to the popularity of this band.
I agree. This song was higher on my list when we voted.
Okay.
I had it. I think I had it number two. I really like this song, and I I agree with you about Robert Plant. Look, these guys all fit together great.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Jimmy Page is a great guitarist. John Bonham's a great drummer. John Paul Jones is a great bassist. And Plant's a great vocalist. And it seems like that all of these things blended together really well with this band. And I think this song, what Led Zeppelin 3 was a little more acoustical in general right. than some of their other albums. And it probably would have fit perfect on this album had it been on there. But... yeah, there's a lot of great acoustic influence with Jimmy Page, and he's fabulous with it. I mean, he does everything with the guitar, and yeah, this is a great song. I'm gonna let
you guys talk. It's also not overly done. You know, there's no big Page lead. There's no
right.
Yeah, it's just basic acoustic rock and roll.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, I think the other thing that's kind of interesting about Led Zeppelin overall. Is the sense that Jimmy Page was essentially a built-in producer for them. They never really worked with any outside producers, right, that were kind of steer their sound. I mean, he had engineers, good ones, you know, Glenn Johns early on and some other guys, but he did the production. I mean, it was the way Jimmy Page wanted it. And I used to work in a mailroom at an office with this guy who was a little different, and I won't bring up his name here, but... He used to, you know, fancy himself a music aficionado, and especially Zeppelin. And he told me that the way Jimmy Page got his great guitar sound was that they had this special box that was waterproof, and they put his guitar, I mean, they put his amplifier and a microphone and submerged it at the bottom of a swimming pool and then ran the cables out, waterproof cables. And that's how he got this incredible guitar sound. That's nice. What he firmly believed.
Straight from the mailroom.
He sounds like right. a special fella.
He was a great guy. So that's the, but those are kind of the stories you would hear. It'd be yes. like, wow, Zeppelin, man, how do they do it? You know, but those guitar overdubs, you know, like you were saying, Robert, just those acoustic little flourishes are so perfect. And, you know, it's a beautiful song. I love it. And the other thing I'll say really quickly is that for a brand new band, you know, they were able to sign to Atlantic Records right off the jump. And they were on this major label that was just starting to support, you know, rock and roll bands in America. You know, they had Cream, I think, and maybe
Page was a fixture though already. He was a studio.
Yes, he was right.
Music, you know, session musician. Mm-hmm. He was on like 90% of the albums coming out of London.
Yeah.
for a while there.
Him and John Paul Jones, right? Both did a lot of studio work. But yeah, you know, I think Peter Grant, their manager, played a big part in this, you know, in this band's story.
He was a bit of a thug.
Yeah, some dark ways too, you know, that him and Richard Cole, their sort of tour manager in chief, you know, used to like to beat people pretty much into a bloody pulp. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that Spinal Tap cricket bat manager stuff definitely comes from comes from Peter Grant and Led Zeppelin. But yeah, they were able to be you know, so ubiquitous because of, I think, the fact that they, you know, right from the start, as Brad said, they had a tremendous amount of talent and production and experience right off the jump. So it wasn't like they were, you know, neophytes right. starting a garage band like Greta Van Fleet or something like that. Whoops,
you and I were texting about this earlier in the week, that Jimmy Page was essentially a music industry veteran by the time he was 20 years old.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
You're right about Jimmy Page, man. That guy had been around forever, and he played for everybody. And, you know, at 15, 16 years old, he was playing. He was playing with Joe Cocker and the Kinks, and I think he played on, I think he even played on like a Stones and Who, you know, as a session drummer.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, guitarist.
Right. So you mentioned how all the pieces really fit with this band, and I think that's largely because of Jimmy Page. Like, he got the right guys.
He did.
To be in this band, and it was exactly what he was looking for. And not to say, obviously, that what they brought to it, they had their own individual contributions, mm-hmm. but I think a lot of it was because he sort of knew where he wanted to go with this band, and he got the right people involved.
Yeah, he was definitely the leader of this band.
Yeah. All right, now this one, number 13 on the list, to me, this is sort of... In a way, it's very sort of quintessential Led Zeppelin. It's Dazed and Confused, and it's because it just is sort of, it has the Led Zeppelin hallmark where they sort of, it goes off in these other directions, right? I mean, it's, today if somebody recorded this, you'd be like, that's very experimental, right? You know? Where should we pick this up?
I don't know.
All right, let's just try this here.
Thank you. for so long, it's not true. One did a woman never bargain for you? Lots of people talking, few of them know. Soul of a woman was created for love.
I mean, essentially a blues song again, but in this would have been this on their first album, 1969. Yeah. I don't think anyone had quite heard a blues song like that.
No, and probably not at that volume. You know, legendarily, they played pretty loud early on, that a lot of people were stunned by the volume and how loud their drummer was.
So this is the first time I've heard that song through headphones.
Wow.
Yes. And it is an amazingly different experience listening to it through headphones.
Headphone band, it, right?
Yes.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point.
You know, this did not make my list. It was sort of one of those, you know, just another heavy metal Zeppelin song. But when I hear it through the headphones, I'm putting it on the list.
Yeah, I'm surprised it didn't make your list just because I know you're a big Grateful Dead fan. This is their jam piece.
Yeah.
Like, this is what they, you know, when you go to see the, or when people went to see them back in the day, they would jam on this for a long, long time, and it would always be different, and, you know, it's just their jam piece.
I do think, though, Rob, the band benefited from teenagers having, like, a stereo in their room with headphones in this era. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was that kind of a band. You know, you didn't want your parents to hear this. So you're going to listen to it with the headphones. And then sonically, it was just perfect for that experience.
I think this song, too, was a carryover from the Yardbirds, because this was one of those that Jimmy Page started experimenting, I think, a lot at the end with those guys. And this is the one in concert where he plays it with the bow, and they do, like you said, they go off in all these different directions. And I think this is one of those songs that when you think Led Zeppelin, this is what you think of because of that.
You can really hear how, that, you know, as Brad said, these guys were great musicians, but live they had a lot of empathy for each other when they played. Like, they knew where they were going to be. John Paul Jones and Bonham and Page and, you know, Plant, when he was, you know, singing notes that Jimmy Page would replicate on the guitar or whatever it was they would do. They all knew where they were. They were like a big snake, a leviathan, whatever that is. Comes to mind.
But well, so right. I mean, that's really their magic, I think.
Yeah.
They play together as a band so well. They really play it off of each other. Like you say, you know, there are songs that, you know, Jimmy Page will be playing a note that kind of descends down, and then Robert Plant will do the exact same thing, and they just kind of trade back and forth, and just, you know, they do really amazing stuff.
I just want to point out, you using words like Leviathan, Kevin just cracked open the beers.
Yes, that's
for
right.
Everyone here. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, the K.
That's where that's coming coach. From. Yeah. All right.
That's right.
All right. We're running long on this episode, so let's move on. The countdown will continue.
Yeah. This is going to be a long week, man, because it's Zeppelin.
All week. Mm-hmm. The countdown will continue. So those were numbers 15, 14, and 13. We'll pick this up again tomorrow.
Yes. And I just want to say really quick, I'll try to sprinkle in a few names of those who helped us out. We had Keith Jacobson, Jeff Nolan, our old buddy from the Hard Rock Cafe. I thought that was appropriate. Thanks, Jeff. Brett Motif, BJ Bonin, The Ange weighed in with his Zeppelin song, so that was cool. And I got some audio from the Bish that we will play when we get around to the appropriate song.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
With us is Kevin Spain, Brad Mailer, and Rob Gates.
Okay.
You guys are going to hang out all week. There's more beers in the fridge. We're going to order up some pizza here.
Cool.
And we'll talk to everyone out there in podcast land tomorrow.
Why would Zeppelin have ever put out a greatest hits album like every other popular band? They never put one out because every album had greatest hits on it. Like, you couldn't really, like, I mean, who's stupid enough to try to narrow it down to 15 songs?